Why, hello, Don Taylor. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. How's your Thursday going so far?
So far, not too bad, really.
All right. You ready to begin today's program?
I am indeed.
All right. So you have your option today. We'll make this lady's choice. Let me make sure everything's plugged in over here. All right. So for the opening speech. Let's see. I think you have three female options, as it were, for the opening speech. We got your crazy, we got your kitschy, and we got your campy.
Give me a little more of a clue of what kitschy is.
Well, you mean as distinct from the campy one?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have crazy, we have kitschy, we have campy. The kitschy and the campy, one is more actively ludicrous than the other. One probably seemed ludicrous at the time. One only seems ludicrous now.
Let's go with that one.
The one that seems ludicrous now?
Yes.
All right. Okay. And let me get this ready. All right. So shall we begin?
Yes, please.
All right. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program beginning now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Gotta get off, gonna get.
Now, the motion picture that shows what America's all-time number one bestseller first put into words.
Gotta get hold, gonna get.
I wasn't much of a man living with you, Needy, but that's over. I'm straightened out now.
With that little whore!
That little whore makes me feel 9 feet tall.
Dolls, the instant turn-on. For instant love. Instant excitement. Ultimate hell.
Nellie O'Hara!
Starring Barbara Parkins as Anne. Good girl with a $1 million face and all the bad breaks. She took the green pills.
Well, how do you think I feel sneaking out of your apartment at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Patty Duke as Nellie, who was such a nice kid. And then someone put her name in lights and turned her into a lush. She took the red pills.
Sure, I take dolls. I've got to get some sleep.
I've got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. It's sparkle, Nellie, sparkle.
Nellie, you know it's bad to take liquor with those pills.
They work faster.
Susan Hayward as Helen Lawson, who had the talent to get to the top.
And I'll make it grow.
Gut, fingernail, and claw fighter who went down swinging. She took the yellow pills.
Look, they drummed you right out of Hollywood. So you come crawling back to Broadway. Well, Broadway doesn't go for booze and dope.
You get out of my way. I've got a guy waiting for me.
That's a switch from the fags you're usually stuck with.
At least I never had to marry one.
You take that back!
Get your hands off
back.
Me!
The nation's most startling and hotly discussed bestseller, now on the screen with every shock and sensation intact. Now, the all-time bestseller is the motion picture you wanted it to be. Valley of the Dolls.
There we go. Never say Rick Emerson didn't do anything for you. As I was assembling those last night, I figured that you would. I figured you'd probably find that amusing.
It makes me just want to pop a fistful of Vicodin and pull out my flask.
Well, really, what doesn't? All right, it is 18 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of July, in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious, studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for coming by on this Thursday. It is 503-505-6964. If you'd like to be part of today's program, I am activating the phone as we speak. 503-505-6964. 504 503 505 6964. You can also message us via Skype at Rick Emerson Show. It's all one word there, Rick Emerson Show. Or you can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. And the chat box is open and running as well at the website at rickemerson.com. Via these many methods of communication, my friends, ye may interact with us as we begin today's cavalcade of whimsy and merriment. Here's what's coming up today. Big interview today. Alex Ilika from Viso is going to be sitting in this chair to my immediate right. So he'll be here about a half an hour or so from now, 1:45-ish. Although we said 1:45 yesterday, and then we just had some story that was going on and on and on and on. Poor Alex Mesh got in here like 15 minutes late. Aaron Mesh, what did I say?
Alex Mesh.
Aaron Mesh from Willamaweek. So we'll try to stay on track today. So Alex Ilika from Viso will be in the studio later on. We'll do today's top five as well. Top five songs from 25 years ago this week. And I've been saying that without actually looking at the piece of paper, and I'm hoping the math is right in my head because I'm not very smart. 1985 is 25 years ago, right?
Yes.
God damn, I'm old. That really is the important thing today. That's way more important than any of the songs, any of the glib observations I may make about it, any of the passing pop culture references that I will throw out, as is my wont. It's just that I'm old, really, so that's kind of the bottom line. Let's see, what else is coming up today? Geek Watch on the way, Monkey Watch, Corpse Watch coming. Oh, and I've totally forgotten about this. So, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. I say getting ahead of myself. But, so I got this, we have this big pile of stuff to give away. And it's not like there's a big timeline for doing it. It's not like I have to get it done, like, now or anything. But we've just assembled, and by we, I mean Cheryl. Our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa, has assembled this big pile of items for giveaway. And we gave something away a couple weeks ago to a guy who called in with the answer to something or other. And I've been meaning to devise some method to give some of this stuff away. And a lot of it, we've got the several books from Powell's Books at Cedar Hills Crossing. Our good friend Dan Hanico brought in, including The Passage, which is apparently a thing that everybody's reading. I think apparently it's the must-read book of the summer, and I had not heard of it. But we've got that. We've got a bunch of the Ice Road Trucker books. We've got... have I got this right? Yes, it's Kraken.
I've been eyeballing that Kraken book by China Mieville. And I've been wanting to read it, and Cheryl said, "Well, if you read it real carefully and like don't
break the spine
break
on it,
the
or anything."
And I'm like,
"No, that's how do you think I read like half the things that came out while I was working at CBS? You think I paid for that book by Slash? No, I did not. No, it was like a $29 book that went home with me over the Christmas holidays. And that, yeah, you just make sure not to bend it too far. Use a bookmark instead of laying it face down, and then try to avoid eating any food that's covered with a slathering of grease."
So I can't read it in the tub like I do most of my reading. I would have to actually read it sitting in a chair like a normal person.
I mean, look, who are we fooling? If we decided to give away a book that had fallen into the bathwater of one Dawn Taylor, that might actually make the item much more desirable. I mean, far more so than if I just sneezed on it or something. I mean, so it's... So we get this big pile of stuff to give away. And so I was talking to Cheryl about it, and she said, well, you know, we can... She said we can give one away to think what was then we had... That was right as we were passing the 500 mark in terms of subscribers. And she said, well, we can just sort of give one away randomly to one of the listeners. Except she didn't say it's one of the listeners. She actually said... We can give one away, to one of the, and I think she said Glorious Bastards or something, just out of habit. I think it was the thing she said, you know, without even really thinking about it. And I said, well, we're not really calling them the Glorious Bastards at this point, because it was a sort of a CBS thing. And I actually came up with that name, just to be fair, and it was like way before the Quentin Tarantino thing, I think, had been announced. It was just a thing, it was a thing that occurred to me as being a great phrase, and it still is, but it is also very closely associated with CBS and with that version of the show and whatever. It's not like I dislike the name. I just feel like, different iteration of the show, clean slate.
Yeah.
So that's when she had the most brilliant idea. She said, rather than just, giving a book away like once a week or giving a prize away once a week to some member of whatever the listener, the listener collective is called, she actually suggested that we just have the audience come up with the name for the collective, and then that is actually the first prize is given away to the first, the person who actually comes up with the name for the collective.
That's very wise.
So there you go. So
that's Cheryl.
It's all about thinking on this program. So we probably. You know, enough time to get into it right now because we got stuff to do. But at some point over the next whatever, week or so. We just got to try to come up with some name for the aggregate, some name for the database, as they say in the corporate radio world. So I don't know.
Our demographic.
Yeah, well, but it's, you know, it's like, you know, because the good names are all taken, like Teeming Millions, taken. Army of Minions, taken. Kiss Army, taken. Glorious Bastards, not taken, essentially. So we got to come up with some name for just the entire Rick Emerson hive. Except it's not hive, because that sounds like a thing that you have to like itch at a lot. So anyway, so be thinking about that. And, you know, you don't have to call about it right now or anything, but just be rolling that around in your head. And if you are the person who comes up with the name for the Rick Emerson Collective, we will toss something bright and shiny your way, and then we will then, I don't know, endeavor to do that on a semi-regular basis going forward. And blah, 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 blah. Dawn Taylor's working on the following stories as we speak, ladies and gentlefolk.
University of Texas takes a Klansman's name off of one of their dorms. There's new evidence in the murder of Heather Mallory, and it turns out giving criminals catchy nicknames can actually lead to their arrest.
Fantastic. That is all coming up today, including Alex Ilika from Vizo. He will be here. We'll have the top five songs from 25 years ago. And, oh, and did I play you this? And I think I must have this soundbite that I found. Let's see. I'm just going to turn the monobed off for a second, because occasionally I will run across sound files and I have absolutely no idea whence they derived. I don't know why they were ever spoken, whoever said that. This is what I did with my evening last night. I sat at home with an external hard drive of 1.5 terabytes, which is a lot. I mean, I think a terabyte is 1,000 gigabytes, and a gigabyte is 1,000 megabytes, and a megabyte is whatever. It's 1,000.
Whenever I hear something like that, it just always makes me think about my first computer, which was a 64K Mac.
Yeah. I had the VIC-20 that had a mighty... And the thing about the VIC-20 is, it was so... tomorrow we have a Mr. Dave Howell on this program, and he was a guy that I interviewed for Outlook Portland, and he was so fascinating. I was like, we have to get this guy on the radio show. Long story short, he has a company called Avatron that they create apps for the iPhone and the iPad and the whatever. But he worked at Apple Computer for the longest time. He had this company called... I think they were called Pablo Software, and they created a lot of sort of CGI-type software. But he's just a massive computer nerd. It was just the greatest guest, and we just sat and rhapsodized endlessly about, do you remember the Amiga? But I was talking about the VIC-20, because his first computer was the Commodore 64, blah, 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 blah. And I was wondering, the VIC-20 was just such a jip, because it didn't even have 20K, it had 16K. It was like they named the thing first, and then had started putting the memory in and went, well, wait, there's no more room. Just put it out now as it is. It'll be fine. Who's ever going to notice? Or that they had come up with 16K, but they decided that they called it the VIC-16. It just sounds... VIC-16 didn't even sound like a thing you would want. VIC-16 sounds like some sort of... Like a name you would give to a part of the chromosome that gives you scabies or something.
Or a malt liquor.
Or that as well. So they just called it the VIC-20. But I was going through my 1.5... terabyte hard drive with all my sound files last night, and I realized that I just the huge collection of sound files that A, don't make any sense, but B, come from some sort of context so far in the past and removed that I have no idea why these things were ever said. For example, I'm just going to give you this one. This is our friend Peter Carlin.
Bitches ain't nothing but hoes and tricks.
Why would Peter Carlin ever have said that phrase? In what context would that have made any kind of sense at all? Let's just one more time.
Bitches ain't nothing but hoes and tricks.
There's no reason why that phrase would have been uttered by Peter Carlin or really by anybody who is not a member of NWA. It doesn't make any sense at all. Do you have any... I'm just going to play one more time. If you have any sort of...
Bitches ain't nothing but hoes and tricks.
Dawn Taylor?
No, someone on the text box says that he was quoting NWA.
Is that true?
I don't know.
Is that a thing that we know is actually the case?
I don't know.
All right. Let me see if I can find another one here. If memory serves, I do believe I in fact have. I think I have an entire folder full of insane things that Peter Carlin has said because he was the guy who was most relied upon to just say things that. You know, that from anybody else would have been, I don't know, that would have been nonsensical, but from him they were just flat out surreal. Let's see, where's my Peter Carlin? Well, how about this one? There's a, kids, who can forget this big hit from yesteryear?
You stick your fingers in the hole and kind of diddle around the thing that hangs inside.
I have no idea what that means. Why would he ever have said that? Anyone? Anyone?
And why would you save that?
No. That's the other thing, is why would I have said, no, by God, I've got to file that away so I can keep it forever. How about this one, I think. Here's another Peter Carlin noise for you.
Out the Derby lately, you should check it out. There's going to be a terrific championship bout between the Breakneck Bettys and the High Rollers. And in any way, so I did this big story. It's going to run in the
No, this is, I think that's wrong. There's one where he's actually just making a sort of sound with his mouth for reasons that are not, that probably weren't clear then and are certainly not clear now. So this is not a thing we'll do today, but at some point, like maybe tomorrow or perhaps Monday, we're just going to go through all of these, or at least a section of it. Because, I mean, there's many, many thousands of these that have piled up over the years. And we're going to try to figure out exactly which of these we're going to keep and which of these. Because some of these we will never use these again, half of them. They've just been sitting here for reasons that now elude me. So file that away in your mental, filing thing. All right, anyway. At the news desk, ladies and gentlefolk, this is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
University of Texas regents agreed today to strip the name of a former law school professor and early organizer of the KKK from a campus dormitory. The dorm was named after William Stuart Simpkins and will now be known as Creekside Residence Hall. The two-story brick building was constructed in the 1950s. The unanimous vote came after a motion from University Regent Prentice Gary, who is African-American, to make the change. Simpkins, who was a Confederate colonel, helped organize the Klan in Florida after the Civil War. He taught law at Texas from 1899 to 1929 and gave speeches and wrote papers promoting the Klan and terrorizing blacks. Regents also voted to change the name of Simpkins Park, a small green space next to the dorm that had been named after Simpkins' brother Eldred Simpkins, who was also involved with the Klan and served on the university board from 1882 to 1896.
Do you get the feeling that like one in three guys in the South at some point was in the Klan, and that one in two buildings there are named for the Klan in some way?
Something like that, yeah.
This is like how we're going to call hillbillies Sons of the Soil from now on.
I like that it actually takes until 2010 for someone to say, you know...
Wait a minute. No.
That building we have named after a Klansman?
This seems like it might be a bad idea. Let's try to rename this something less overtly horrible. Here is Dawn Taylor, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry, you know, and in all of my hustle and bustle, I was talking about going through this 1.5 terabytes of sound last night, and I'm sorry. Now I've been distracted by. Now people are texting me.
I'm getting the messages too. Somebody says that Carlin was paraphrasing something from Dr. Dre.
Now I'm getting that people are actually texting me sort of wraparound sentences. They're doing like a reverse Mad Lib thing of sending me sentences in which they think this would have made some sense. And none of these are helping to explicate the situation. So you know what? I'm just going to close this and we're going to pretend that didn't happen. Here's Dawn Taylor.
The husband of Heather Mallory pleaded not guilty to her murder in a Multnomah County courtroom Wednesday morning. Brian Cole, 37, was arrested in Idaho earlier this month after the remains of his wife, Mallory, were found near Estacada. Police said her remains were found on Bureau of Land Management forest land off Highway 224. Late Wednesday, a judge unsealed the probable cause affidavit, which revealed evidence that may point to Cole's guilt. According to documents, Mallory's body was found in a military-style body bag in a wooded area. Inside the bag, authorities found items missing from the couple's bathroom, a bent towel rack bar, a rubber bath toy, and what appears to be the remnants of their bath mat.
That's completely creepy. The rubber bath toy is really what puts that into Oogville. If you have a military-style... Well, first of all, where would you even get a military-style body bag? Apart from the actual military. I mean, is that... That's not like a thing you can just go get at a Hank's U.S. Surplus.
You might be able to. You can get all kinds of wacky things at Army Surplus.
If you bought a body bag, much less a military-grade body bag, wouldn't you just assume that your name was being put in a database of some kind? That's the thing that, like, it's like going in and just buying, 15 bone saws and a wheelbarrow. You just figure you're on a list of some kind.
In Southern California, I lived near an Army Surplus store in Hollywood, and I went there a few times, and they had tents and boots and all kinds of stuff. But they also sold stuff for uniforms, which freaked me out. It's like, apparently, it's illegal to sell uniforms, police uniforms and security uniforms and things like that. But you can sell the shirts and the pants and then sell replicas of the patches that go on them behind the counter so that people can then therefore put them together themselves and have a fake police uniform. And this was one of those places that people would come and go, and I would be stopped at a light, and I would see some guy going in with a rifle in a rifle case.
Uh-huh.
And so I always thought that place was like in Pulp Fiction with like Zed in the basement.
What was an Army surplus?
It was an Army surplus store in Hollywood, California.
And there's just looking. I don't.
And they had all kinds of crap. I mean, just weird things.
I don't mean to paint with an overly broad brush here, too, but we've all know, and we all went to high school with a guy who sat next to us and seemed to be reading Mein Kampf a lot, or maybe just reading endless copies of Guns and Ammo magazine, and then just started wearing things that you could never get away with now in a high school, that they would just bounce your delinquent ass right out of there.
Yeah.
Or we'd occasionally just come to school wearing camouflage for like no readily identifiable reason, and that's the kind of guy that shops at the Armory Surplus store. Now, 90% of those guys are completely harmless. It may be a little odd, but I mean, you know what? There's nothing wrong with that, certainly. There's 90% of them are harmless. 5% of them are not harmless, but are not quite bright enough or lack the ambition or motivation to do anything about it. And then you get your remaining 5%, which is like your Eric Harris. And that's the guy that just sort of, you know, just everything inside kind of tips over one day. And he says, well, I guess it's time to bust out all the components of my cop uniform and this military grade body bag. It was really astounding the number of things you were able to buy at an Army surplus store when I was growing up. The things that it seemed like they ought to have been illegal. Here, would you like a fixed bayonet of some kind? Yeah. Yes, I would. Thank you very much.
This one, sir, I was talking about, they had cases and cases of old sea rations. And so one year I bought a whole bunch of little army green cans that said fruitcake on the side. And I gave them to people for Christmas, but I couldn't get anyone to eat one.
That is great. You know, one of the great regrets of my life, actually, is that some weeks ago when I interviewed, when I talked to John Tesh, and I think that was actually before we launched the show, wasn't it? It was like the week before. So I didn't get a chance to talk about this. It's a long story. It's not all that interesting. But I was the MC at this Portland Area Radio Conference seminar on, I think, the 18th or something. It was like the week before we went on the air, and the keynote speaker was John Tesh, who actually ended up being a really cool guy. And I just I felt
I told you.
I didn't feel bad as such about that, but I did then wonder how many people I slag off on a daily basis who are actually not deserving of it, because he was a really cool, down-to-earth, mellow guy, which you had predicted.
Mm-hmm.
And he had that guy had no illusions about himself. He knew that he looked kind of silly and that he had fundamentally an absurd job, as do we.
Tesh is awesome.
He really was. This sounds retarded, but I sound like Ed Grimley. I wanted to hang out with him. I really did. I found myself going, I wonder if John Tesh is going to be available later and we could go out to lunch and we could have a great time.
I think he like plays D&D too. I mean, he's a big old geek.
Oh, he was a huge nerd. He was awesome. And he told a story about, and I do have a point here, but he told a story about coming up in radio that was, it was very similar to my own. Where, you know, he was having to play religious programming off big reel-to-reel tapes or whatever at like 4 o'clock a.m. on a Sunday morning or whatever. But now I've forgotten what my point actually was. I swear to God, I just had it moments ago.
It all goes back to Army surplus stores and fruitcake.
He talked about being about working at a radio station when he was like 14, 15 years of age in like Virginia or wherever the hell he's from. And he made a reference to the fact that the building had a bomb shelter in it. And he did that. This is so good. This is one of the high points of my life that I influenced John Tesh's behavior. He told that story because when I was introducing him, they had this whole thing where they wanted me to tell little tiny vignettes or anecdotes about working in radio sort of slice of life stuff. And so I told the story that the audience, they've heard many times, about how the first time I did, the very first place I ever did a talk show was at a radio station where there were no additional rooms, there were no additional studios, and I was the first live talk show they'd ever had because the whole station was syndicated and automated and it came off a satellite. And so for want of a better place to do the show, they just put a microphone and a phone and a little tiny control board downstairs in an actual literal bomb shelter where there was a fallout symbol on the door and you had to go down these long winding steps and it was dank and the water dripped out of the ceiling and it was concrete reinforced with steel and it was painted a color that I was later told was mental asylum green and it was to keep you calm because the idea was if you were in there with your nearest and dearest or just a bunch of guys you work with for like 7 months, they were trying to postpone the killing and eating, I think, of your compatriots for like the longest amount of time possible. So it was this mellow shade of green. There was the weirdest. I wish I'd taken photos of this.
So what was John Tesh's story?
Well, it was just the same thing. It was just that he had you know, worked in a building with a bomb shelter. For once, I actually had the more interesting story. But he told that story because he had heard me tell this vignette about how. And you never think to photograph these things at the time, but in the basement in this bomb shelter was a little bicycle type thing that was affixed to the wall, was bolted to the wall, that was then in turn hooked to an air filter. And the idea was that you would bicycle a couple hours a day, and it would generate enough power to go into this reserve battery that would then filter the air that it was bringing in from the outside, so you weren't just the breathing fallout or something. You were like inhaling, like nuclear winter. And then immediately next to the bicycle was this huge silver box. And I was, for the longest time, I was fascinated by the silver box. Like, what is in there? And I finally turned it over. I figured out it was upside down. And it said on the top, military grade survival biscuits. And they had been, and it was dated 1961. And I just, it is the greatest regret of my life that I did not open that tin of survival biscuits. This would have been in like 1990 something, 1991, 1992. Just to see what one tasted like, because presumably they were still good. So I am I'm always fascinated by that. I have no idea where you get a body bag, though.
No.
Or why, if you were smart enough to get a military-grade body bag, you would then not be smart enough to take her to, like, I don't know, a different state, maybe. You know, just drive to a different part of the country, dump her body. Jesus.
Well, and also, I would think if you're going to dump a body, don't put it in the same bag with all the evidence that the person was killed in your bathroom.
Where are all the identifying details? Let's make sure they're all in one place, so it's like a one-stop shopping for the man.
It real easy for the CSI guys.
Jesus. All right, here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Kelly Osbourne and British model Luke Worrell have called off their engagement amid reports that he cheated on her.
Goddamn Luke Worrell.
They were engaged in November 2008. He stood by her during her rehab stint to treat an addiction to painkillers and supported her during her Dancing with the Stars period. And as we discovered earlier, he just looks like a big, tall Justin Bieber.
All right. So I mean, if you go to Facebook.com/Rick Emerson right now, the Rick Emerson Facebook page. And I was made aware last week there's more than one Rick Emerson Facebook page, which was a thing that I was not privy to. So I guess there's a Facebook page for the Rick Emerson show, which is some of the people go. And there's a thing for me, Rick Emerson.
By the way, we have a message from the text box that someone thinks that the name of the listeners ought to be the Emerson Military Grade Survival Biscuits.
All right, fair enough. It's going on the list. It's not really going on the list. So for simplicity's sake, we'll just say Facebook.com/Rick Emerson, at least for today. I posted a picture of this guy, this loathsome individual, this unholy creature that walks like a man, Luke Worrell. And you said he's a model? Is he also an actor? Would I know him from somewhere? I got to Google him here in just a second, see what his deal is. But this is the guy who was dating and then engaged to Kelly Osbourne, who has been dumped by Kelly Osbourne because he cheated on her, allegedly. And I had never heard of him. I didn't know what he looked like. I had no knowledge of him whatsoever. And I went from not having any idea who this guy was to just wishing him the longest, painful, most protracted death you can possibly imagine. Just based on this one photograph. And you can see this at Facebook.com/Rick Emerson. I tell you what, if ever there was a face that was just begging to be punched, it's this. If ever somebody was just screaming, like, bludgeon me with a brick, it is this guy, for reasons that I can't really explicate, but that are real nonetheless. So I'm looking at these comments here. Let's see. I think he looks like Spike from Buffy, except more you. We've got the guy's a douchebag. He looks like an alternate universe Sam Ronson, Spencer Pratt's love child, et cetera, et cetera. So there's nothing really much to say about this except that, I don't know, except that there's certain people whose mere existence is enough to drive you a little bit aggro, and he is one of them. All right.
I am actually right now I'm emailing you a link to one of his modeling photos, which is the one I came across that looks like some kind of bizarre foot fetish kitty porn.
Is it going to fill me with hate?
I think it is, yes.
All right. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A 17-year-old boy who didn't want a party to end is in juvenile detention. Medford police say the intoxicated youth was arrested late Sunday after he stabbed a 64-year-old landlord who complained about a noisy party and asked the revelers to leave. Though he suffered stab wounds to his hand, shoulder, and head, the 64-year-old landlord wrestled the teen to the ground and held him until police arrived.
Well done.
The party guest was lodged in the Jackson County Juvenile Detention Home on the charge of second-degree assault. The landlord was treated at a Medford hospital and released.
All right. I'm looking, I'm checking for your email right here, and it has not yet arrived. So, which, again, I should know that there were, oh, there we go, Luke.
I know, we're right across the room from each other. It should be
I
easier.
Guess we ought to figure out some way to just hand things to one another. All right, so I'm opening the photograph of this guy right now. Oh, God. Oh, wow. Why did you show that
Isn't that horrible? Isn't that just horrid?
Okay, you have to post that. I mean, if I'm going to be horrible, this is like the picture of the sea creature that I'm going to inflict on you later.
Well, you need to post that on Rick Emerson because I could only post it to my Facebook.
Oh, God, but it means looking at it. Oh, and that's the other thing is how am I going to find a picture of this horrible sea creature without actually having to see it again myself?
Exactly. Well, you could give me like Google search terms and I could look for it myself.
Oh, no. I don't want you to be able to see a thumbnail of it. I want you to see the entire thing in glorious full.
Is this like a video rodeo thing? It's going to make me look at this thing and
yes.
See if it makes me shriek.
Yes,
horror.
I am. No, it will. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk, ladies and gentlefolk.
Are we available to do a watch here?
Yeah, let me just close the picture of this albino, this hairless albino. He looks strangely Teutonic. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like he's one of those guys that, would have been hanging out with Astrid Kircher or something, in 1961. All right, let me close that so I can get rid of it. I'm sorry. This is what? It's a corpse watch?
Yes, it is.
All right, here's your corpse watch, ladies and gentlefolk, for whatever this is, Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone.
Here is your corpse watch for Thursday.
A Tennessee teenager is accused of killing his mother and having sex with her corpse.
All right. Okay. Just sorry. It's been a while since we've had one of those. That's going to happen every now and again as, insert show element here happens for the first time in about 7 months.
Okay.
This, I believe, is our first necrophilia story, certainly here, and I think probably the first one that I've really had to deal with for eight or nine long months.
You're out of practice.
Yes, I am. Please tell me there's no photograph.
Just a photograph of the kid with his crazy eyes.
Okay.
Cody Wayne Miller, 18, was first charged as a juvenile after his mother's 2009 death.
Why do they always have names like that? Why? Cody Wayne Miller, you get off your mama!
Miller was 17 years old when Sherry Cooper was found inside a large trash can outside her apartment. After his mother's death, Miller allegedly told a police investigator that he was mad at his mother because she didn't take him shopping for clothes for a school dance. He got out of bed about 1 a.m. on the morning of May 7th and strangled his mother with his belt. After she was dead, Miller said he had sex with her corpse, then put her body in a trash can and covered her with blankets and went back to bed.
Well, it was probably early, and sex with the dead takes a lot out of you, I would imagine.
The charges, first-degree murder, felony murder, and abuse of a corpse, were transferred to adult criminal court by Johnson City Juvenile Court Judge Sharon Green. She made that ruling June 15th, the third part of a transfer hearing.
Is there a photograph of the kid with the crazy eyes, you said?
Oh, there is indeed.
All right, there's no photo. Ah! Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus, it's like he's looking into my soul. I feel like I have to hold this paper at arm's length. I feel like he's siphoning my life force out of me.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of crazy there.
This is exactly, and I will post this photograph because you all are going to see this along with me. This is exactly the kind of guy that kills his mother and then defiles her body in some horrible carnal follow-up to the homicide. It's like I can't turn away.
He's hypnotic, isn't he?
He's like a corpse raping hypnotoad.
Another name for the listeners.
Which is like being a hobo humping slobo babe, but different. all right. Jesus God, I gotta turn that face down. Can I just back up for a second before we're going from one thing to the other, and this is one of those days where my brain feels like it's gonna fall apart.
Before I'm just trying to make it a good Thursday for you, because you said you have trouble with Thursdays, so I'm just trying to make it a more exciting Thursday.
I forget whether Arthur Dent couldn't quite get the hang of Thursdays. I think he actually, that was his lament, but that is certainly the case with me. I have never gotten the hang of Thursdays, and so the people, longtime listeners have heard me say that, if ever a day during the week, just all things being equal, is going to go, not bad, but just be off kilter. You've said that sometimes. It's a whole day off kilter. Thursdays are the most likely to be off kilter for me, and so it is today. Okay, let's do one thing at a time. Let's close the abomination of a corpse watch. God damn, that's a creepy photo. And there's nothing. Is that his mugshot or is that like his?
I think that's his mugshot.
His school photo.
No,
or something.
I think that's his mugshot.
Oh God,
I'm just looking at it now and it's the same thing. It's like, yeah.
I can't even
hypnotoad.
I can't even find the music here. I've lost. It's my eyes no longer work. I've lost the ability to read. All right, there's your corpse watch for Thursday.
I'm digging up home.
I'm Googling his photo right now. And I'm putting it on Facebook.
It's Cody with an E, by the way. Cody. Wade Miller.
I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yeah, tonight I'm sitting alone.
Cody Wade Miller. Let's see. Facebook. Oh, this is somebody different. Cody Wade Miller.
Wayne.
Oh, Cody Wayne. Oh, okay. There we go. All right. So I was going to say, I find it hard to believe that. Oh, God. There we go. All right. Cody and Codie.
Codey.
Codey. So I'm getting all these results, but nothing. Okay. Codey. Man accused of strangling mother indicted. There. Okay. There's his freakish human whale of a face. All right. I'm going to post this on my Facebook page right now. The thing about this photograph of Luke Worrell that you sent me, and Luke Worrell is the that's the visual aid for Legion of News that is posted at my Facebook page, is that I understand that this is not kiddie porn, but you also understand how this kind of looks like it is kiddie porn. There's part of me that is reluctant to post this.
And he's holding that shoe.
It is. It's
weird. He's holding a lady's shoe.
You really did nail it perfectly when you said it looks like kiddie porn shoe fetish photography.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's from his website for booking him as a model.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then you know what? Never let it be said that Rick Emerson doesn't take one for the team or for the corpse raping hypnotoads. Or whatever it is the audience is going to be called at this point. Hold on a second. Okay, what should the caption? Help me write a disclaimer caption for this photograph of Luke Worrell.
Oh, for Luke Worrell.
I swear to God, this isn't child porn. No, that probably is going to get me looked at by somebody. I can't believe it isn't illegal. All right, I'll just say visual aid.
Yeah.
Number one. All right.
Luke Worrell.
Aid. Number one for today's Rick Emerson show. All right. Jesus, God. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk, ladies and gentlemen.
When is our guest arriving, by the way? I hear some sounds out there.
We're going to break here in just a couple minutes and have him come on in.
Okay. The so-called Barefoot Bandit's quirky nickname has grabbed as much attention as its alleged exploits. And one crime-fighting expert says such names are more than just a catchy way to remember suspects. They're part of a proven strategy to help nab them. Retired FBI Special Agent Bill Rader gives a couple of name examples that helped authorities make arrests.
And which cut am I looking for here? This is called what?
Purpose.
Purpose. And it's right here, I believe, I say, stalling for time. There we go.
Miss America Bandit or the Michael Jackson Bandit or the Early Bird Bandits or whatever, they would know right away what they were looking for even before they arrived at the bank.
So this is Ed, and he's talking about the Barefoot Bandit, which was, and I think it was somebody local that called him that. I may be wrong about that, but I think it was somebody in our immediate vicinity that came up with that name.
Rader says the name usually stays with the person for a long time. Brandon?
We've
These things do follow them, into a prison. And some of the guys are proud of the names, and then others got quite upset with some of the names.
Well, Barefoot Bandit isn't a thing that really strikes fear into the hearts of the guys in cell block 5 with you.
Well, apparently he also named someone the Michael Jackson Bandit.
One of the bandits wore just one glove during the robbery, which I thought was unusual. And he was the Michael Jackson Bandit.
And who is this guy?
This is FBI Special Agent Bill Redder.
You know, this is the lingering legacy of John Douglas, that all of these guys, everybody who's ever worked at the FBI, angles for a microphone or a camera at some point because they all want to be they want to get like the Mindhunter book deal. And I have one more cut from him. Is this him talking about?
Yes, he describes his favorite named bandit, Miss Piggy.
5'8" and weighed very close to 300 pounds. And the interesting thing about Miss Piggy was that her getaway car was a Volkswagen. And the Volkswagen, of course, would list to one side every time she got in to make a getaway.
Okay, but bonus points for use of the verb list, yes. By the way. Well done. All right, Luke Worrell, I am posting this this photograph right now so that all may share in my pain. And then I'm going to follow it up with the corpse raper. And then later on it's going to be that horrifying sea creature that has a bunch of spindly legs. All right, and posting it. Seriously, this is the creepiest. This picture of Luke Worrell is the creepiest thing I have ever put on my Facebook page. And it's going up right now. All right, there we go. All right, if the man comes knocking at my door later on asking why this photograph is here, you all are witnesses. Don sent this to me.
Yeah, it's my fault.
And I believe, part of our servers are in another state, so that's actually, interstate trafficking of this photograph should it get me in trouble later on. All right, there you go. That's at facebook.com/RickEmerson. All right, I lied. Let's do one more here, then we'll take a break. And then on the other side of this, Alex Alika from Visa will be joining us here in the studio as part of the Rick Emerson radio program.
Omaha's bomb squad was called in Monday afternoon to deal with a suitcase left in a downtown street corner. Officers were called just before 5 p.m. The luggage was across the street from Omaha's City County Building. Police said the suitcase belonged to a woman from South Dakota who left it on the corner after getting off of bus. She told investigators she was too tired to take it with her to a nearby ATM. Traffic was shut down in the area for over an hour. We treat all suspicious packages like that very seriously, said Matt Manhart with the bomb squad. His name is Matt Manhart. The information was that it was somebody's luggage, but every time a tech approaches a device or a suspicious package, he has to approach it as if it is an explosive device. Dressed in a protective blast suit, Manhart x-rayed the suitcase to confirm it was safe. I don't think she realized what a panic it would cause the city, said a lieutenant with the Omaha Police Department.
I like the idea that they actually have just sort of the authority to blow up anything that might seem even vaguely suspicious. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter what it is. It could be a briefcase, could be a sandwich. If you think that there's something bad in there, you're able just to blow it all to hell.
I just always think, like, that seems like something that would happen to me, and it would be terrible. Like, I would just...
Leave your purse behind for 5 minutes.
Leave a suitcase outside of a coffee shop, outside of a Starbucks, because I didn't want to haul it around. And then I come back and traffic's shut down and there's a guy in a radioactive suit.
Just in time to see your purse being blown up into millions of small pieces. Hey, can I get a... Awesome. All right, the Rick Emerson Show, we're going to take a little break here. We'll come back with Alex Alika from Viso. Still to come today, we have a Geek Watch, Monkey Watch, and we'll do today's top five songs from 25 years ago this day. You can stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program on the Emerson News Network.
Bitches ain't nothing but hoes and tricks.
Don't know which way to true intentions. And if you're just playing games, then I'll have to say. So do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?
Indeed, it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you want. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com or dawn@rickemerson.com. You know, I'm going to send you something really valuable there, so you have no choice but to go there and actually check it. And
I have
it.
Been checking it. I checked it today, even, at the top of the show. I have been looking at my email.
Are you fibbing?
I am not fibbing.
So rick@rickemerson.com, dawn@rickemerson.com, or you can go to the text box, which is located at the website itself, at rickemerson.com. A couple of bits of business. Don't forget, this show is now available on iTunes. You can get this program via iTunes. You got to do it by going to the website and clicking on the link. If you just search iTunes, what happens is you come up with older versions of the show. You get sort of like classic stuff and then the KUFO stuff and whatever, which is not that there isn't a place for all of that. If you are looking for current iterations of the show, you got to just go to rickemerson.com and search on the iTunes logo. Just click that. And also that we have the people. I got an email yesterday, 2 days ago, somebody asking if they could give a gift certificate. You can. Actually, that link is right below the subscribe button, which is at the website. Just go to rickemerson.com to where it says listen live. Look for the thing that says give a gift subscription right there. Did you just tell me somebody sent you Cody Wayne Miller's Facebook page?
Yeah, someone sent me a link to Cody Wayne Miller's Facebook page. He's MillerCody18 on MySpace. Actually, not Facebook, MySpace. His current mood is aggravated.
His current mood is soul eating. I think that's really what it is.
See, there's his taken by himself with his camera.
Oh my God! See, now that photo is
he still looks crazy, doesn't he?
That photo is even worse. You know what he looks like? He looks like a bloated Lucas Haas.
And that's a picture he picked for himself for his MySpace
page. Here's the creepy thing. Okay, I have to get at least one of these posted now before we plunge on in, because this is no fair on the audience. Don, if we're going to take advantage of this new medium and really be socially interactive here in the thrilling world of cyber whatever, then we have to be all right. I got to post this. Let's see. So. I can't believe I'm typing this phrase. Visual aid for today's corpse watch. Visual aid number one for today's corpse watch. Here's why I don't feel bad actually making people listen to me type. Is by definition, if you are hearing this show, you are at or near a computer in some way. So let's see. For today's corpse watch. Today's corpse watch. Ladies and gentlemen,
this is entertainment.
I give you Cody Wayne Miller, corpse humper. All right, there you go. All right, and I am attaching the photograph. And this is the one, the photograph that I'm attaching right now is the one from his, is the one from the news story right here. God damn, he's evil. And it's sometimes you can just look at a person and you can just smell the void inside. You can just see the vacuum that exists where normal people would have, like, thoughts. All right, I have to just minimize this this thing. It's just freaking me out. All right, there you go. It's 503-505-6964. And actually, fib just now. I think Alex from Viso is running late at the moment, so we are plunging on ahead without him. He's just going to have to wait. At the news desk, it's Dawn Taylor.
Well, I am.
And now,
like you were from frantically the news jabbing desk, in a few last-moment keystrokes over there.
Dawn Taylor.
We have a Geek Watch.
Of course we do. Before we roll the Geek Watch, somebody sent me a reminder email to watch that the OCD show on VH1 because they said, quote, Rick, I've been listening to you for years, and believe me when I say the show is right up your alley. So this is it where they try to cure people of OCD? Is that the thing?
I have no idea. It seems like it's a doctor who he's got sessions with OCD people.
But I don't even... Here's the thing about that. I don't know how you can cure someone of OCD. I'm not saying it can't be done. But if you're going to cure somebody of OCD, I don't know how you do that by means of a mechanism which is, by definition, imposing more structure on their lives. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Did you ever see Howard Stern's, not his like pay-per-view stuff or his movies, but have you ever seen any of the old episodes of the Howard Stern show that he did back in like the late 80s, back on the East Coast?
I don't think so.
It was pretty good, actually. It was not I'm not like the biggest Stern fan, but just because I didn't... Stern seems to be one of those things that people... They latch on to Stern because they grow up with him, or they got him at a certain... They were introduced to Howard at a certain point in their lives. And again, I'm not trying to knock him. A lot of people assume that just because of the type of show, that I've done most of my life and the type of show that we do, that I'm a big Stern fan. And I don't... he's great. I just haven't really listened to him a lot in my life. But he did this show on the East Coast in, I don't know, maybe 89 or so. And one of the greatest bits he ever did is he brought an OCD guy, because Howard himself was full on screaming OCD at the time. And he didn't tell anybody. It was like not a known thing. He hadn't discussed it openly. But he had this OCD guest come on the television show. And it was the guy was a real neat freak. He was constantly having to tidy things, and he was not unlike myself in that he was having to pick up little specks of lint and clean people's shoulders off if they had like little bits of white stuff, or they had like a little lint or whatever. And so Howard, they just brought the guy out on the stage and they just handcuffed him to a chair and then just started sprinkling shredded newspaper and confetti everywhere.
Oh, God.
And I think they actually brought it out all tidily tucked into a bag. And then they just started sprinkling it. And there's this great footage of the guy actually... I mean, the guy is like... He's manacled to a chair, like Houdini. And the guy is actually thrashing and flailing around in the chair, trying to put the confetti back in the bag with his toes. I mean, it's just the most... It's the most gratifying thing to watch, because then it makes you realize that, A, you, and by you, I mean me, are not alone, and that as crazy as I might be about having to touch the light switch, or answer the phone a certain way, or I got to pick up my pen and just... I got to set my pen down in just the right... Like, here's an example. If you look at any pen that I'm using, and I got a whole thing with the pen anyway, if you'll note that the pen... always, when I set it down, faces clip side in and the clicker side angled to my left, because that's just how it has to be. I don't know why, just the Archangel Gabriel appeared to me in a dream one night when I was like 5 and told me that's how pens had to be set down on the table. So if I put a pen down in a way that is different than that, it just makes me physically uncomfortable. So, but watching that guy, I felt infinitely better.
Mine are mostly related to food, which I didn't really realize. I had an eating disorder many years ago and was treated for it. And one of the things that I was told, I was with some other people, and we were told that, people with eating disorders often have food rituals.
By the way, we're putting a pin in that, and we're going to go back to it when we're done with this OCD discussion. So,
okay. But weird food rituals, and I discovered that, I had a few. And I still do have these weird little issues. Like last night, my husband made me some peanut butter toast, which is a lovely thing to do. It's like, are you hungry? Sure, I'll make you some toast. And he brought me the peanut butter toast, and then I looked at it, and I immediately made him... like, bring me the jar of peanut butter and a knife so I could fix it.
I was just going to say, let me guess the manner in which you fixed it. You had to, let's see, you had to fix the toast. Was it that I'm guessing one of two things. There were one of two things, quote, wrong with the toast. And by the way, just in case anybody wonders why it's such a pain to have a bunch of bizarre little OCD rituals, you've got to take part in it, or why I just have accepted long ago that I was nuts. The idea that there could be something wrong with a piece of toast. I mean, toasting seems like a one-step process. You press the button. Eat. I am guessing that either, and this is peanut butter toast, no other topping, no honey, no butter?
Nope, just peanut butter.
Chunky or smooth?
Smooth. And that is key, by the way. It has to be smooth peanut butter.
What, you can't eat chunky peanut butter?
I can eat it, but I prefer smooth.
Well, that's just a preference, though. Well, that's not being crazy. It's not like, I mean, you wouldn't be incapable of eating.
Okay,
it
let
something.
Me put it, I'm not incapable of eating, but I hate it because I can't get it to do what I need it to do.
Okay, and so what you need, this is my guess, what you need the toast to do, and the toast won't behave, you need the peanut butter to be spread so that it covers every exposed millimeter of the top of the piece of bread.
Yes.
All right, but not overlapping the edges. Up to, but not overlapping the edges.
It has to be consistent.
That was my second guess.
I also have this thing that sandwiches, toast, things like that, everything has to be even. Like, I will make sandwiches, and I will sit there with a knife, and I will cut pieces of, like, lunch meat and cheese to fit in the spaces, because I want every bite
has
to be.
What do you mean?
Well, like if
so that the surface area is
covered. Yeah, because the meat and the cheese are usually not the same size as the bread, so you have like bits that are uncovered, and a little bit of overlap is okay. But really, what I want is uniformity throughout.
You would rather have an overlap is okay, if not preferable, but the exposed space is not even acceptable.
Right.
It's got to be every.
There must be meat, cheese, whatever in each bite. So it has to be like It all has to be fit in there.
See,
somehow.
And this actually, so it was a combination of my two guesses then, because my first guess was that it had to be spread out so that there were no unexposed areas. My second was that Patrick, when making your toast, had done what most people do. He takes the knife, he puts it in, he puts the peanut butter right in the middle of the toast, and then just sort of goes and spreads out from the center in every direction. But when you do that, by definition, and I guess it's maybe not surprising that I know this, by definition, you get more left in the center than everywhere else.
And then he didn't bring it all the way out to the edges. So there was like dry toast around the edges.
Okay, but here's the real test. If you'd said, like, bring me a knife so I can fix it, and he'd been like, no, there are no more knives, and there's no more bread, there's no more peanut butter. And
yes, I would have sat there with my finger and I would have like fixed it with my finger.
See, I hadn't even thought of that. That hadn't even occurred to me. I was going to ask if you would have just skipped eating the toast altogether.
No, I still would have fixed it.
With your hands.
With my hands.
With your hands. You would have been shoving peanut butter around on top of a piece of toast.
Yes.
All right. Well done, Don Taylor. Good for you. Excellent. See, so we're all of a piece here, is what we are. All right, I'm sorry. We were doing a watch of some kind.
We're going to do a geek watch.
Jesus, God. Here's your geek watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Ugh, this awesome. High-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember, you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here's Don Taylor with your Geek Watch.
Apple has been on the losing end of a public relations battle over its iPhone 4. First this week, they received a not recommended rating from Consumer Reports. And there have been numerous complaints from customers about dropped calls. CNET executive editor Molly Wood says that Apple has been wishy-washy about taking care of the issue.
What is the name of this?
Hardware.
There we go. This is...
There does appear to be an antenna, a hardware problem with that antenna. And Apple's customer support has been telling people, we will issue a software update that will fix the bar display, but it can't do anything about this kind of hardware issue that we're sort of acknowledging, but not really.
All right. By the way, just a FYI, not to interrupt our own interruption of a thing that we were doing that interrupted a third thing that was, in fact, part and parcel of a fourth thing that probably interrupted an overarching structure. I just got this from Cheryl, from Alex via Cheryl Kanakoa. She said, Alex Ilika from Visa was going to be today. She says, just talk to Alex. He had to replace his phone I wonder if he had an iPhone 4. Oh, please tell me that it's so. And lost all his appointments. He is really sorry. He missed several appointments this week because he had to replace his phone, and his appointments didn't transfer over. He would love to do a quick phone in to apologize and to come in next week. I don't know if I was supposed to be reading all this on the air. Too late now. So he is awaiting our phone call. All right, so I'll tell you what, Will. All right, so I'm going to, let's see, I'll call him in a bit.
Well, our tech geek
okay, so let's
wizard,
get back to the iPhone thing here.
Well, our tech geek wizard Thomas Gill says that actually he was great, by the way, on my show, Ham-Fisted Radio, over on PDX-FM, Fatboy Roberts challenged him to go an entire week without popping up in the text box.
To answer something?
Well, no, to correct something.
Yes.
And he's been awesome. But the week is up now.
So now he can be correcting me left and right.
Now he can correct all over the place. But he said that woman is wrong, that it's a software problem, that it was fixed with today's software update, and that a simple piece of tape fixes the real problem with it for some reason.
Well, because it is... I act like I know what I'm talking about, but it's something with the placement of the antenna and that your hand causes some sort of interference or whatever. But that's not really the issue. I mean, that's the thing. It's not about the actual hardware, although you think that at some point during the design process and the testing process, somebody must have picked the thing up and tried to use it. I think there are two levels on which this is absurd. The first one is the idea that nobody at Apple ever used the phone in such a way that they held it in their hand, their left hand, that way, and tried to make a phone call. And that if they did, that they didn't think of a better response. Because the reason this became an issue, the reason it reached such conflagration proportions, is that Jobs' response was essentially, you know, hold it differently. Like it's your, you know. It's like when you go to the doctor and you go, doctor, it hurts when I do this. And he says, well, don't do that. I mean, that's effectively what Apple told people. But that being said, it is a little overblown in the sense that there was, and I'm surprised it took this long, I have felt for some time now that there was an Apple backlash kind of brewing out there just because they've gone from being, I mean, they are the overdog, at this point. They are no longer the young, scrappy software company that's being held down by the evil behemoth Microsoft. I was surprised there wasn't a bigger backlash at the iPad. Not necessarily because there's anything wrong with it per se, but just because, like, it's their turn. The time when Apple gets everybody's love because they are perceived to be a mom-and-pop operation in Cupertino is past.
Well, but industry people are also saying that one of the big problems is that Apple has just responded so poorly to all of the complaints they've gotten on this, and that they've done things like... Apple should be, one of these guys, a Citigroup analyst, says that Apple should be giving out free bumpers to people who have these problems so that they could get fixed, which they charge $30 for, and those cover up the metal stripe, and they should actually just give them to people for free. But no, they're charging $30 for it. The company has also attempted to control
They deleted a bunch of links to Consumer Reports articles about it. That's the other great thing. Which doesn't bother me because I was never under the illusion that Apple was like the Mother Teresa of computer companies.
There is a point at which everyone is looking at them. They are under such intense scrutiny, and it is bad PR to handle problems this way.
I mean, that is the thing about Apple. The one aspect of this that does surprise me is Apple has such great marketing, and this is just a terrible marketing move. I mean, this is really—it's a week of bad marketing choices, and usually those are all Microsoft's.
A lot of industry analysts are saying the company should issue a recall, and I think you actually have something about that.
Let's see here.
Apple's response was very dismissive of this issue. I mean, you just simply—you cannot tell people that they have to buy another product to fix the first product.
Oh, and this is like the bumper thing you're talking about.
Yeah.
I have the three, and I have one more. This is the same woman talking about Apple's image.
It seems to me that it would be the best thing they could do for their image right now to say, you know what? We're going to do right by people. There is a flaw here. It's been widely repeated.
And how many of these things have been sold? Is there any sort of estimate? I mean, I would imagine it's skillions.
Yeah, I believe that is the technical, the actual number is skillions.
The bottom line with all of this, and probably... I would imagine that Steve Jobs or somebody at that company, just has some sort of a keynote presentation they do for him where they say, look, it's going to cost us this much to recall all the phones and, you know, and or to issue bumpers. But then, as you can see on this chart over here, every one of these people will still buy whatever you put out next. So it doesn't really matter, Steve. And then he says, great, fantastic. What's next?
Well, I guess they are having a press conference tomorrow.
Which I will absolutely watch, only because I want to see how he handles it. But I mean, let's not you and I traffic in the illusion that this will affect Apple buying habits in the future, because it won't. Because every one of those people complaining will buy whatever he sells them next. Doesn't matter. They'll buy it sight unseen.
I had actually considered, I'd been looking at the difference between going with like a Droid or an iPhone or whatever when I move up from my little Luddite telephone that I have to an actual smartphone.
Please tell everybody what kind of phone you use now.
I have a Virgin Mobile pay-as-you-go telephone. It is a telephone. I can make calls. I can text.
Did you buy it from 7-Eleven?
No.
Did you buy it?
I bought it at Best Buy.
Okay. So it's not like one of the it's not like one of those drug dealer phones that they sell at the Plaid Pantry.
I could replace it, I think, at 7-Eleven, though, if I wanted to.
But that's okay. Bruce Agler was here, and Bruce is, if you've read The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell, he describes a lot of personality types, and the first type he discusses is the Maven. And the Maven, according to Malcolm Gladwell, is the guy who knows not necessarily a little, but knows something useful about everything you could possibly imagine on Earth. So you could say, well, I'm going to this hotel that's in Stunkville, California for the weekend. He goes, when you're there, now make sure that you ask for – now, they won't tell you this. It's not on the menu at the restaurant. You have to ask for it specifically. Now, if you tell them that you want the baker's special, what it is, they'll bring you 3 extra donuts and they'll comp you your second cup of coffee. But they're not going to tell you that. You have to ask for it. Mention my name. So it is with the phone. We're talking to Bruce about about people. We're working on a mobile stream for the show and whatever. And we were talking about what kind of phone you have, and Lara just got a Droid, and you were talking about your phone from Best Buy. And Bruce takes his phone out of his pocket and he goes, "I swear to God, you were here, so you know this is not an exaggeration." Bruce goes, "Let me tell you, I pay $2.50 a month for my cell phone. I don't even know how that works. I don't know how, because I call him and he answers, and he's somehow." Through the mobile stream, which is not yet public, he somehow is listening to the show, walking around and calling it, and he's on a $2.50
phone.
Well,
no, he also has an iPod Touch. He listens to the show on the iPod Touch.
Yeah, but the iPod Touch is...
But his phone is just a phone.
Wait, but the thing is, he doesn't call... That's the bizarre thing about it. He actually carries that $2.50 cell phone, I sound like Chris Rock's dad, phone with him, but that's not what he calls us on. He calls us on the iTouch, which isn't a phone! That's the thing. That's the bizarre thing about it. That little cell phone he carries is for like some, I don't know, that's for some specific kind of, he has like a business phone and then like a personal phone. And I think that's his business phone number. He actually calls us using the iTouch, which does not have phone capability, by the way. That's what makes it not
Bruce
an iPhone.
Bruce is kind of magical in a lot of ways.
So it's just a whole thing. Anyway.
Yeah, I had considered, I'd been looking at whether to do the, and I was actually leaning a little towards the iPhone, and then they made that announcement that AT&T wasn't going to offer unlimited data packages anymore, that you had to you were going to have to pay more and more and more the more data you use and stuff. And that just annoyed me. That was just annoying. So it's like they're punishing you for using their product a lot.
It's such a strange society we live in now, in that the idea that we have to pay for as much as we use of something is offensive. That if a guy who uses it for an hour a month and a guy who uses it for 100 hours a month, it's just wrong that they should be expected to pay different prices. And
that's
don't get
right.
me wrong. No, and I'm with you. I found out that my company, which... I know this is going to be Bruce. I know it in my heart, coming to explain the thing. But I found out that they were jacking me on my cell phone bill because they weren't giving me the all-you-can-eat package, and I got all angry about it. Hello, Rick Emerson Show, sir, madam, as the case may be.
Hello, this is listener Brock. I just wanted to clarify, it's called the iPod Touch, not the iTouch.
The iTouch, okay, so it's the iPod is...
That's creepy.
I guess the iTouch sounds like a thing the corpse raper would do after the iKill. All right, is the
that
iPod...
That it does.
So if I call it the iTouch, do I sound like an old guy who doesn't know what he's talking about?
It's not to be held against you, but yes.
Okay, thank you. So the iPod Touch is the way that we refer to that?
Yes, sir, technically.
All right, and you are listener Brock?
That is correct.
All right, thank you, my friend. Are you spreading the word about this very fine radio program?
All the time.
All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Cheers, sir.
All right, there you go. That's listener Brock calling to clarify.
Not really connected to anything. James Urbaniak on his Twitter feed the other day said that he met a fan of the Venture Brothers whose name was Brock.
Really?
And he found that delightful.
Are we done with the Geek Watch?
We are done with the Geek Watch.
All right, there you go. There's your Geek Watch for...
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warman.
For Thursday.
I shall avenge you.
Next.
Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
And I really am glad, and I mean this sincerely, that listener Brock just called up to clarify that it's iPod Touch, not iTouch. Because...
I think I said iPod Touch, though. I believe I said it correctly.
You probably did, but as he just revealed, I have now inadvertently sounded like an old guy for like 3 weeks. You kids with your iTouch and your eye patch and whatever
and
it is.
And your face space and your tweet head and whatever you call that stuff.
I mean, there will come a time, and we all know this, when all of us, you listening, us talking, all of us, everyone here, the whole collective, all of our pop culture references will begin, first they'll be somewhat inaccurate, and then they'll just be outdated. You with your little Wayne, I say.
Listening to that Miss Goo Goo, or whoever she is with the bubble clothes.
Oh, man, speaking of Lady Gaga, so I, first of all, I thought I was maybe past the phase where I would hear some new pop song like once and then just have it stuck in my head for like 9 days in a row. But goddamn, if I have to wake up one more time, and this morning it was Total Eclipse of the Heart because of yesterday's top five, it was just the first time in I think over a week that I have not woken up with that Alejandro song by Lady Gaga just cycling around in my head over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. Which, I mean, so that paired with the fact that somebody sent me the greatest piece of video that I'll boil down to some audio in the next couple of days we'll play. It is a compilation of mistakes that Larry King has made during his show when he's interviewing people.
Oh, that's nice.
One of them with Lady Gaga, by the way. Here in just a few, we'll call Alex Alika from Visa on the phone, and we'll see if he'd like to grovel telephonically about his failure to appear today before we reschedule his appearance. Let's do one more. We'll call Alex. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the top five. Here is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Bristol Palin and the father of her child, Levi Johnson, are engaged again. The couple reconciled 3 months ago during custody discussions about their 18-month-old son, Trip, Us Weekly magazine reported on Wednesday. According to the magazine, the couple said Bristol Palin's mother, former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin, did not know about their plans until now. Melanie Bromley is the West Coast bureau chief for Us Weekly and spoke to Larry King live about how
Bristol
this all came about.
And Levi approached us. They wanted to tell their story in a controlled way.
I immediately hate this woman.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because she sounds like that third season villain on Alias.
Bristol and Levi approached us. They wanted to tell their story in a controlled way. And so they approached us and asked us if we would break the news for them.
Together they called.
Together they did. And we've kind of spent the last year and a half developing a relationship with both of them.
I'm assuming that's a real accent. It just doesn't sound real to me, but what do I know? All right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just lost in thought.
You were just doing nothing over there.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what's involved as a magazine, spending a year and a half developing a relationship with a pair of dumbass teenagers.
I would imagine buying them some cheese fries at the mall and then just watching them stare blankly for a while before a thought comes into their head. I don't know. I mean, especially because none of those guys, in the Palin family, Sarah Palin is savvy and shrewd. I'll give her that. But it's not like, I don't think she has a lot of, it's not like she's familiar with much in the world of academia. So, and you look at the rest of that family and it's like, every success, it's like every degree away from Sarah Palin you get, it's like the dumbness is exponential. It just sort of, you know, the Bristol Palin just, the time I've interviewed, I mean, I'll put it this way. The Bush twins seem much brighter than she did, and they don't seem all that bright to begin with. She just seems unbelievably just as thick as two planks. And that guy, the impregnator, whatever his name is, Levi. And his whole thing about, I'm going to pose for Playgirl and be a hockey star. Which, he seems like that guy in the beginning of the movie, the Hal Hartley movie, Trust, where he's like, I get up every morning at dawn and I eat 15 raw eggs and I run for 10 miles because this arm is going to make me a superstar. Levi Palin seems like that guy, but not quite as charismatic. I mean, that should indicate what town, what was the name of the town in Alaska? I've completely forgotten everything about the election
Wasilla?
Cycle. Wasilla, something like that. I mean, that should indicate to you how slim the male seed pickings are in Wasilla, even if you're the governor's daughter. You know, even if you come from a seat of power in Alaska, that's the best you can do is that guy. You know, when it comes to somebody giving you a baby, that's the top of the line. That's the finest guy in Wasilla she could find to give her a, to give her the high hard one.
Well, and we discussed yesterday or the day before, the whole point of the story, one is supposed to believe that Bristol Palin and Levi Johnson, basically right after he came out and said, I made up that stuff about Sarah Palin, the stuff she said. I never really heard her say that. That was all lies. Oh, and now we're engaged. And we're supposed to also believe that they managed to somehow sneak around with Us magazine to pose for a photograph for the cover of the magazine and do an entire story and then have it go to press. And Sarah knew nothing about it.
It's almost as though you believe that there's some sort of skullduggery happening and that not everything is added as it appears in this story.
Well, I believe we also have audio of Melanie Bromley saying how they got this secret story.
Let's see. I think this might be.
We've kind of spent the last year and a half developing a relationship with both of them. And so they wanted to control this. They wanted to tell their love story in their words. And so that's what we did for them.
In their own words.
I think I just threw up in my mouth a little.
As their own, in their own words with Chris Kresge.
Their love story.
Somewhere Eric Segal is just rotating in his casket. The great thing about this, the truly great thing, and you look actually disgusted. Here's the thing I don't get about you. Here's the one and only aspect of your personality that I find puzzling or odd.
Everything else about me is crystal clear.
Perfect sense. The thing I don't get about you is that on the one hand, Don Taylor, you're cynical in some ways, and you have a little bit of a jaded sensibility as someone who worked in the media, in print media, followed by radio, et cetera. You know, you've had enough exposure to it, and also, you're just, like, you're a thinking person, you're smart, so you see that the world is fundamentally sort of effed, and you have that sort of, slightly jaundiced eye through which you view things. And yet the story like this somehow still has the power to irritate you. When, I mean, the idea that Us Weekly, it's not like it's the Pentagon Papers, for Christ's sake. I mean, it's Us Weekly. It's Us Weekly and a woman who talks like this.
Bristol and Levi approached us. They wanted to tell their...
And the idea that she might not be entirely forthcoming with the circumstances under which the story developed, and you're just, I can't believe it.
I'm not surprised by it. At no point did I say I was surprised by it. It's just the thing, Cheryl Kanakoa turned me on to this company that makes good, really, really good quality and really super cheap makeup that you buy on the internet, called Eyes, Lips, Face. And one of the things they do is they like send you these free subscriptions to magazines. And then I go, sure, I'll take the free subscription. And then I forget that I said okay. So like for a year I got Vogue. I'm still getting Vogue. I don't know why. And now just like 3 weeks ago, I started getting OK magazine, which is just this horrible tabloid magazine that is full of people that either I don't know who they are or even the ones I do know who they are.
You actively dislike them.
I hate them all. It's all about whether Jennifer Aniston's going to have a baby and people on the hills and the people on the Bruce Jenner's daughters, whoever those girls are with
yes.
the big asses. And I just hate all of these people so much. And this whole Bristol Palin thing, it's more of the same. It's like I hate Us magazine for spending the money on doing this. I hate them just for existing, and I hate people who read this stuff and encourage media to just cater to the lowest common denominator. I am just filled with loathing for the entire thing. That is my feelings on it.
She's Dawn Taylor. Kids, you were asking me earlier if we had some really overtly happy music to be playing, like some really cheerful, and I wish I did because I would have launched into it right then. I don't have any. All I have is That's it. We didn't really the same thing at all. That didn't really accomplish the.
No, but it kind of sums up my feelings.
No. By the way, so if you go to Rick Emerson, I'm sorry, to facebook.com/Rick Emerson, somebody asked me where the quote corpse humpers picture is. Hope you're doing that at work. It's at facebook.com/Rick Emerson. Would you send me at your leisure, or you can just tell me, actually, what is the link to that kid's MySpace page? It's myspace.com/what?
Oh, he was Miller Cody 18, I think,
Miller,
and it's Cody.
Cody 18, because I want to put that picture up as well. I'm sorry. I guess it would help if I actually did that. And Miller Cody 18. No, I got nothing. Okay. Not a big deal. Whenever you get a chance, okay. I want to post that photograph, because the creepy thing about that photograph from his MySpace page is that he's taking it. He's doing the Facebook thing, you know, of like holding the camera at arm's length and taking a picture of his own face. But he's doing it angled upward, not angled downward, like you sometimes do if you're attempting to sveltize yourself. He's holding the camera down like at waist level and angling the camera up, sort of like the Lenny Riefenstahl of MySpace photos. But the great thing about that photograph is that's exactly the angle, you know, from which he would have seemed to be saying, you know, so Mom, as soon as you quit moving.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Oh, no, that's exactly.
But yeah, it is. It's www.myspace.com slash.
I can't even type space. Myspace.com/.
/ Miller Cody, Cody 18, all one word.
Okay. Myspace.com/Miller Cody 18. Is it coming up? Okay, there we go. So I must have mistyped it. See, now, first of all, in this photograph, which I will post to my Facebook page momentarily, does he not, A, look like Lucas Haas if you put him on some sort of a force-feeding diet
of
lard and just brown sugar? And secondly, looking at this face, can you not see this face uttering the words, "Now, if you don't struggle, this won't hurt nearly as much"?
Just crazy starry eyes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All right, I'm going to post this right now so that everyone may suffer along with me. It's like singing along with Mitch, except there's no singing and I'm not Mitch. And also, it's painful. All right, there we go. And that's posted. Oh, and I'm sorry. And I called it visual aid number one again, but you know what I mean. It's actually the second one. So there you go. Fantastic. So everybody now there, you can now go. And you can see this horrifying thing because, as Henry Rollins once said, I think about these things so you don't have to, but now you will. Let's do one more, and then we will take we might actually go into the top five at that point because it's already 2:36. Where does the time go?
Let's do the monkey watch, and that'll be cheery.
All right, let me submit this. And by cheery, you mean something that will put Dawn Taylor in a more sunshiny frame of mind.
Because I like monkeys.
All right, visual aid number two for the corpse watch is posted. Everybody go look at that. You have it that, you kids. All right. My monkey watch has gone. The phrase "my monkey watch has gone missing" is sort of funny. I have no idea where that's gone. It is for some reason. It's not on my soundboard.
Well, how about clown watch then? I can put the monkey watch aside.
Your mom's
for later.
A clown watch. I'm sorry. What? I don't even know where I was going with that. See what I mean about Thursdays being off kilter?
Do you have the clown watch sound?
I do. I apologize. I don't have the monkey watch. I know we have used it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not showing up on the soundboard. They're all there. I got your geek. I got your Tanya. I got your snuff, your office, your job, your Obama, your freedom.
Oh, give me a clown.
I have a clown for the lady in the back and wreck it. Here's your clown watch for Thursday. Show is just unfolding layers of crazy. Have you ever just sat back and really just gotten an arm's length from the show and just listened to it? And you said to yourself, what kind of people are these? Who are the people behind this Rick Emerson show, and why does it exist? Here's Dawn Taylor with your clown watch.
A 40-year-old Wisconsin man was taken into custody after he devastated the inside of a house in Roberts, Wisconsin, with shotgun blasts in an attempt to thwart perceived clown intruders. Police said the man was apparently suffering from some kind of hallucination when the incident took place at 4 a.m. Friday at the home of the man's parents,
sure he was.
Where he lived. Police received a report that shots had been fired inside the house. More shots were fired when the deputies arrived, and he apparently fired a shot at his parents as they fled in a vehicle. The man then came out of the house carrying a shotgun with a bag of shells over his shoulder and was yelling at persons unknown. He was taken into custody. The man told investigators he felt a number of men dressed in clown suits were attempting to invade the house.
Do we know definitively that that's not true? I mean,
well, we don't. They say he was apparently hallucinating.
Yeah, but that's only because he said people in clown suits were invading the house, and they went, well, that sounds crazy.
Yeah.
But I mean,
you know, we don't know for sure.
Stranger things have happened.
It could have been clowns. He could have been being attacked by clowns.
Yeah, can I, you know, and I probably told you this. Let me ask more about your clown phobia, because you're fascinating to me. Let me just lean back here. Let me just lower my chair. I'm actually reclining in my chair a little bit here.
It's a Dawn's Crazy Thursday on the Emerson Show.
There's nothing that starts with a TH that is a synonym for crazy, or I do like a whole three for Thursday. Mm. What is Thursday in Spanish?
I don't remember.
All right, never mind.
Oh.
What was I saying just now? Hey, when you go to your shrink, does your shrink have one of those reclining couches that's like a diamond-tufted leatherette kind of a thing like they always have in the 50s?
Well, I stopped going to the shrink. But,
when you were going to a shrink?
When I was going, no. It was just a regular couch.
You don't go anymore?
No.
I never would have sussed that
tell?
Out. That's hard to believe. Have you ever gone to a shrink, though, that had the classic couch that was the diamond-studded leather?
Or, I don't think so, no.
I have always wanted one of those. One of those couches either in my home or just once to go to a shrink where that, like, Mad Men-style couch is there and he says, lie down.
Or a chaise. Because you always see that in the old movies and stuff. They have an actual chaise.
I don't know what that actually is, though. I mean, I've seen the word, but I don't know what kind of chair that is.
It's like a long chair so you can lay your legs up. The ones in the movies usually don't have arms either, so it's...
Oh, okay, yeah, no, yeah. That's... Okay, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's kind of reclining on one end and then long.
And I never get that. It's like, I think I started going to shrinks too late in my life, or just too late in American history, because now it's all just beige couches and chamomile tea, you know? It's right around the time they stop being shrinks and start being therapists.
Yeah, my last shrink, there was like the little coffee maker and the selection of herbal teas and the little box of Kleenex on the table next to the thing. And she had one of those little fountains to make it all
little Japanese
sound
rock
all,
garden and whatever.
Yeah.
Do you ever do this? Do you ever sit in the back when you were attending to your clearly deteriorating mental state? Did you ever sit down in the lobby or the waiting room at your shrink's office and then just... And you're not supposed to listen to what's going on.
But yeah, try to listen into the other person. Oh, yeah.
And then just hear something. It's either like just several people crying or you hear little snatches of conversation. You just hear like a whole lot of like elevator molest, cream cheese, you know, and you're just going like, what in the hell is... And then you're trying to figure out, how can I get closer to the door but have plausible deniability if the door should open? And you're like, maybe I could be interested. Maybe I could have... I've dropped my copy of Field and Stream, and I have to lean down by the floor so I can hear underneath the door. My thing is, I remember my last... And by last, I mean final, because I... actually, that's not true. Not my final shrink, but the last shrink I went to for any length of time. Because then I was just going to one after the other, and they were all... I didn't click with any of them, so whatever. But this shrink, her name was... I won't give her first name, I guess, even. But she looked like this really hot version of Diane Keaton. So I was a big fan of hers. But the first or second week I was there, I'm sitting out in the office and I'm just thumbing through a magazine. And there's like a couple of us out there and people sitting and you've done this. We're sitting in the waiting room of a shrink's office. It's like being a guy going to a porn store where you don't look anybody else in the eye. You look down at the ground. Everybody knows, why you're there. But no one's going to speak about it openly. You don't want to admit it. And so it's like, look, I know why you're here. You know why I'm here. But let's just pretend that neither of us are here. And then we won't make eye contact. And if we brush against each other accidentally, it doesn't mean we're gay.
But you're sneaking peeks at the other people and trying to figure out what their deal is.
What their craziness is, yeah. And so we're all sitting there and I'm looking over going, alcoholic. Sex addiction or whatever. It's looking at all these folks. And then from inside the shrink's office, we just hear, how do I phrase this? What sounds as though, it sounds like an orgy of some kind is going on inside, like some sort of sexual congress involving many, many, many people. And then it begins to escalate in volume and sort of intensity as though a large group of people are reaching a sort of sexual fulfillment all kind of at the same time. And all of us are sort of looking at each other in the lobby going, like, what kind of psychiatrist is this? What sort of shrink's office have we entered? And it turns out that, as I later was told by the shrink, she apologized later, and it turns out that she was doing this sort of group therapy session for people who've all been, molested or had some sort of sexual whatnot happen in their lives. And so she gets these people that have come in, and because they've had some bad sexual experience or they've been, they've been a victim of some sex crime, that they find it difficult to be around sexual material or activity of any kind, including in their own life, and so therefore blah, 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 blah. So, and they also have difficulty being around other people who are sexual in any way. So one of their mechanisms for treating this is just to get like 13 people in the room and have them all simulate a sexual climax out loud at the same time together.
Wow.
And this happens in her office like, I don't know, like once a week or so. And I kept trying to schedule on that same day, like on subsequent weeks, and it was never really working out for me. All right.
So not to bring our behind-the-scenes laundry to bear, but apparently that story was so steamy it may have actually fried the Live 65 server or the router.
Are we not
or
on?
Something.
Are we off?
According to a couple of people, yes, we've been having some technical difficulties.
Hold on, let me look. I can tell you. I can tell you right now. I can tell you with absolute definitive, a word, a thing, a noun that is modified by the adjective definitive. Let me look. And anyway, so with the clown watch. So the guy just claimed there were clowns, and then the man came and took him away.
Right.
But I will guarantee you that the man never stopped to investigate whether there actually were clowns, right?
I'm sure they didn't. I imagine. Well, he believed there were clowns. Right. I'm thinking the police had believed.
Okay, it says we're on now, but it was glitchy. So we were glitching there for a moment. So it looks like Live 365 has
somebody comes in the text box and goes, just refresh the window, people. I'm like, wow, he's cranky, whoever that guy was.
Yeah, I don't know. So apparently, I looked and we've been on. In other words, the signal has not gone off in some way, but it was and that's what you do to fix the problem. That's exactly if it happens in the future, because we have had these issues before where the stream gets a little wonky. So if at any point, you should come across, you find yourself in a situation where there's static on the line, you're listening to it and it's not entirely clear, the thing you want to do, it's going to be no problem at all. It's 503-505-6964, and that was your Clown Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You never did actually ask me anything about my cloud phobia. We just went off into
I'm going to get to it, but I wanted to close out the watch.
Okay.
And then we got distracted by shrinks and feigned orgasms and so forth.
And couches.
So your clown phobia. Mm-hmm. So this is, you've said you're not afraid of clowns in movies, but in real life. So in other words, if you were just walking down the street and a clown, presumably headed to a party of some kind, passed you on the other side of the street, would it freak you out a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They actually have to be physically present in your vicinity.
Yeah. I mean, if I see pictures of particularly creepy clowns, it will make me feel nervous and anxious, like if I was watching a horror movie or something like that.
Like seeing a picture of a spider.
Yeah. Okay. Aaron Duran, I was talking about the clown thing like last week, and Aaron Duran posted something on Facebook that was this horrible little film clip of this dancing clown, like dancing his way towards the camera. And that just really just was horrible to
now
me.
You know, so. The way to get back at Aaron, don't you?
No.
You know.
Oh, he has this hair thing, doesn't
Aaron,
he?
Aaron hates, he has a whole hair phobia. Even though he himself has hair, he is really off-put by hair, especially the idea of hair being caught in his mouth. And I learned this because I was at a Denny's with him late one night. A whole bunch of us were all out at a Denny's, and he was eating. And I forget if it was him or if it was – it might have been one of us. But he was eating, and I think it was – I mean, it just happens with him. Somebody was like, oh, I got a hair in my – it was like an omelet. We're like, what's this? Oh, it's a hair. And it was that thing where they hadn't, swallowed it, but they had, felt something, some foreign object. And it's gross. I mean, it's just – it's horrifying. But they went, oh, ew. And they, kind of plucked the little hair out of their mouth. And I thought Aaron was going to lose his lunch. I mean, I thought his eyes were going to fall out and he was going to die. He was so, you could see his system just locking up. And he said, oh my God, don't show that to me. And it looked like he was going to spew for a second. And we said, And we didn't know. And I said, well, what are you talking about, the hair in the mouth? He goes, don't even say it. And then we found out there isn't. He has this whole phobia. Mm. And so then the best part is that I found that there's this disease you can get that actually causes you to grow hair all over your tongue. And if you Google it, you can find it right now. You just Google hairy tongue. You'll find it. Because, like, how many things could that possibly link to? And so then whenever he would send this horrifying pictures or whatever, we would just be like, that's fine. And then we'd wait about a day, day and a half, to where he wouldn't connect the two things. And we would just send him an email labeled as whatever. And then there would just be a huge picture of a hairy tongue right in it, embedded. Not even having to click on it, just embedded right in the message. So that's how you fix
I'll keep that in mind.
You fix his little red wagon. All right. Well, let's call Alex from Viso. Then we'll roll our top five, and then we may in fact get on out of here. Let's see. I think I've got his telephone number. So we were going to be speaking with Alex from Viso today, and then apparently his phone went wonky on him, and he has been missing some of his appointments. Let's see if I've got this here. All right. Let's. All right. What are you looking for over there?
The top five.
I handed it to you.
I know, and I don't know what I did with it.
That's great.
Well, there's only so many places it could go.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, Alex, it's Rick Emerson. Hello? How are you?
Hey, Rick, how you doing, man?
I'm fantastic. I understand that you've been having some phone problems, which then became appointment problems, which then became Rick Emerson show problems.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, you summed it up.
So not a big deal. We'll reschedule at some point. I know you are. Here's the thing about Alex is that it is amazing to me, and it's admirable, but it's amazing that people can actually, you know, you pick up a can of Visa or whatever, and you call that number that's on the side, and I have people, they are just astounded but really impressed that when they call the Visa number on the side of the can, you'll actually answer it because you're right there. Yet by the same token, I have lost track of the number of times that you and I have played phone tag because I'm trying to call you, and you're like in an airport, you know, on your way from Bangladesh to Japan or something. So you seem to simultaneously always be at work, yet always be traveling the globe.
Always at play, yeah. I don't know how that works, but, you know, I'm not going to mess with it.
All right, so we'll get you in maybe sometime, I don't know, next week or whatever. We'll figure out a day that works for you, and we'll have you down here to the studios, my friend.
Yeah, I think...
Well, I'm glad you got that new phone. That seems to be working out for you really well. All right. Thanks. All right, there you go. Alex from Viso, kids. Good God almighty. I never could get the hang of Thursdays, he said. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Look over there.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
All right, so let me just ask you this, Dawn Taylor. On a scale of 1 to, I don't know, 7, how off-kilter does it seem where you are right now?
A 5.
Yeah, I'm saying for me it's 5, maybe a 5.3. Things do seem to be a little helter-skelter, topsy-turvy.
But not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad. We have had days when the show just didn't seem to really be going well.
Well,
today the show seems to be going terrific. It's just a little wonky.
I think you and I have talked about this before, that there are good shows, there are bad shows, and then there are just sort of, and then there are crazy shows. And those are usually the days where there's some massive breaking news story where things are just changing by the second and it's chaotic. And then there are shows like today that are just as a little wobbly or a little unstable seeming. Not bad as such, just sort of different. I don't know why this music started playing. All right. Well, then, let's move on, shall we? Here is your top five for Thursday, July 15, 2010. These are the top five songs from 25 years ago today, according to Joel Whitburn and Billboard magazine. Dawn Taylor, where shall we begin?
Number 5, Duran Duran, View to a Kill.
This is where my ignorance of pop music from the 80s really is demonstrated in just living color. I don't think I have ever heard this song. Oh, this is from the Bond film, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so
and
maybe I've heard
the
it
name.
There. Well, okay, thanks. Thank you so much. I especially admire the way you said that without being snarky or spiky at all. I think I have only ever heard this song. I think I've only ever heard the song in the actual Bond film. I don't think I've ever. I don't think I've ever actually heard it just as a song that's played on the radio or whatever.
And yet, it reached number one on the Billboard charts.
My Duran Duran knowledge is so limited; it's just minuscule.
This was the last track that the original five members of Duran Duran recorded together until their reunion 16 years later.
I think I know. I mean, I know that Rio song. And what's the other one? The Hungry Like the Wolf?
Yeah.
I guess that's it. I think those are the only two Duran Duran songs that I could pick out of a lineup as being by those guys. Yeah, I can see now why I didn't listen to Duran Duran then and why I wouldn't now. I mean, I'm sure there's many people who like it. It's just... I'm wondering exactly who the audience for this is. I mean, again, it's number five, so there must have been, you know, it must have been very popular, but...
dance club people? I don't know.
Maybe. I'm trying to
Duran
picture.
Duran Duran is one of those bands that I only ever heard, like, on other people's radios when, like, I was at the beach during the summer or something.
I'm trying to picture what mood would require the use of this music. All right, there we go. All right, so these are your top five songs from 25 years ago this day.
Number four, Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
It's like a cavalcade of things that I would never listen to.
You know, I've only, like, recently in the last few years come around to really liking this song. I don't know why, but I just reheard it at some point and decided that, you know, there's something about this song that I actually like quite a bit. And I generally hate this kind of music, this style of music.
What style of music?
That kind of... techno,
so like a synth
Euro
pop kind of a
synth
thing.
Synth pop stuff, yeah.
I think I would like this song more if it were not by these guys. By which I mean, I think it's the arrangement and the singing. It's a nice composition. The song itself, as it exists, you know, as notes on a page, I have no problem with that. I think it's this bland 80s production that turns me off to it. I just. And frankly, I could do without that weird, you know, that. The weird exercycle thing that's playing in the dun 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 dun. I mean, it's like some weird padded metronome going in the back of the song. I, of course, like many people, this is inextricably linked with the Dennis Miller Show in my head. His television program.
The song just always sounds to me very cool. Like it's taking place in a cool, damp concrete basement.
I could see that. It's that everything is so awash in reverb. I think I'm totally indifferent to the song. I don't dislike it. I don't really care for it. This song, I'm not for it nor against it. All right, these are your top five songs for today. July 15th, top five songs from 25 years ago this week. Don Taylor.
Number three, Prince, Raspberry Beret.
Here's the thing about this song, and I like Prince a lot. Have you ever noticed that the part of the chorus from this seems to have been stolen from Fox on the Run by Sweet?
I hadn't really thought about that, but
Fox on the Run.
I think I could see that, yeah.
I mean, not the whole thing. Prince is a very talented guy, but that bears a striking similarity there. The reason that I actually grew to like Prince, and I wonder how many people this is true for, with one band or another, where it's like a thing you either didn't like or you just had never been exposed to it until you dated / lived with somebody who listened to whatever all the time. And I dated this girl who listened to Prince constantly, just all the time. And this song seemed to always come up. But she was one of those freakish Prince fans where she, and this is way before the Intertron made these things easy, she had all of these like weird bootlegs and like, he had this thing, which I guess was subsequently released commercially, called the Black Album, which was this legendary album he had recorded, mixed, mastered, and then never put out. And it was sort of much discussed among fans. And she got it from like some European, you know, she bought it like in the back pages of Goldmine magazine or some crap. So I did eventually get an appreciation for Prince in a way that I probably never would have otherwise. It was only through the power of boobs, really, that Prince was able to reach me. And then, you know, but here's the thing. But then she went into this weird phase, I don't know what it was, where she quit listening to Prince. And all she, well, first of all, it was Prince. Then she went, then it's like she quit listening to Prince and she went on a series of Jags. The first one was Hootie and the Blowfish. But then, as soon as we moved in together, like always mistake number one, and that's mistake number one through like 50. As soon as, you know, some guys say, well, as soon as you move in together, that's when the sex stops. No, here's what it was. As soon as we moved in together, all she listened to were those nature sound CDs of like Springtime River. All day and night, you know? Or, you know, Rainforest Wind.
That's just crazy.
That's it. I don't know what that was all about. All right. That story wasn't
maybe
as interesting as I thought it was
going to
be.
Maybe you made her tense, and so she needed to listen to these calming nature sounds.
Maybe. Yeah, it was nothing but nature CDs and Sammy Hagar. That was all. I don't know why. All right.
Those are two ends of a spectrum.
Yeah. These are your top five songs from 25 years ago this day. Dawn Taylor, what might number two be?
Phil Collins, Susudio.
This was a whole era of nobody playing anything real.
Yeah, this is a song I could happily go the rest of my life without ever hearing again.
It's strange to think that we lived in a society and in a country that made Phil Collins like a rock star. How did that happen? That was a glitch in the Matrix is what that was. I can see the loathing on your face.
This is just a low point in popular culture.
I am so torn because part of me really likes Phil Collins, but part of me, I think that's because he had a public image. His media persona was so likable. And in the videos, he was always kind of a clown. He was a little jokester and a goof. And his videos were always, very funny. He had good videos. And they always had kind of a storyline where he was very self-deprecating. And then he was on Miami Vice, you know, and he could kind of act. And so I think part of me still looks at him and thinks, Phil Collins. But then part of me just knows he's a dick. I don't know why. And I think that actually came out in one of his divorces where it turned out he was just a bastard.
Say, trading in the wives as they get too old for him.
So it turns out that he is just kind of an ass. So I think that's why I have this weird split in my mind about him. I will say that there are some Phil Collins songs that I really liked. I don't know that I would like them now because I suspect that they probably sound... I can say, there's nothing that dates like the 80s. There's no other era that sounds so immediately dated as stuff from the 1980s. You can find things from 1940 that sound more contemporary than stuff from this decade right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why we're still listening to this.
I will say, I always liked Land of Confusion.
See, but I don't know that you'd like it now. If you listen to Land of Confusion right now at this moment, I think you might go, it's not nearly as good as I remembered. Even some of the he has some indisputably great compositions, but again, they're produced in such a quintessentially 80s way that it's hard for me to get past that. And I try to be very open-minded musically, where, it sounds like I'm very judgmental, and I guess I am, but I also try to hear the song for its own sake. It's not the, like, in other words, it's not the song's fault that it was recorded in the 80s on an electronic drum set that sounds incredibly corny now. The composition, though, can still be good.
The fake synthesized horns.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, and also you're Phil Collins at this point. Get a guy who plays, go down to the corner downtown and find a guy playing a trumpet.
You can afford to pay a brass section to actually come in and record some horns.
That was my thing. It's like when I saw these behind-the-scenes shots, which should have indicated everything, by the way, of Metallica recording the Black Album. And they're doing that song, Nothing Else Matters. And I see a guy, like, doing, like, with one hand and a little keyboard, like, playing the cello part for that. And I thought, you know, you got like $1 billion. Go hire a cellist or four. But you listen to some of the great Phil Collins songs, like, what is that song, I Don't Care Anymore, or whatever that song is. That's a great song, very sparse, very haunting. In the Air Tonight, everybody points to, rightly, is a great composition. And even that, like, some of his later period stuff, like that, I Wish It Would Rain Down is a pretty good song.
But songs like this, where he's actually admitted after the fact that Susudio doesn't mean anything, that he just made up a nonsense word when he first wrote the song, to fill in and was going to, like, you know, write something later and then went, we'll leave it.
Good enough. Yeah. You just did this thing that doesn't work on the radio because, you know, it's the radio.
Yeah.
But your face just had the look of, of the cleanest hate on it. the most beautifully distilled scorn was present on your visage just now.
You seem to be filled with a lot of loathing today.
Yes. Okay. Do you realize we've listened to this Phil Collins song nearly in its entirety?
Oh, I know. Oh, I realize it.
All right, let's just... You are listening to today's Top 5. All the way to the end there. Don Taylor, what might the number one song 25 years ago today have been?
Believe it or not, it was Bryan Adams, Heaven.
Why would I not believe that?
I don't know. Bryan Adams.
You've gone a little wacky on me today. There's nothing inherently funny about the phrase Bryan Adams, but I can tell you were on the edge of a spate of maniacal giggles just there.
Just the corpse humper and clowns and Bristol Palin and then Susu Studio, and my brain is just spongy now.
That should be the show description. Like our meta tags should be clowns and corpse humping and rape or whatever. Susu Studio. I have to say I love this song. I am a huge fan of the song. Unashamedly so, unironically. This and Summer of 69 both. I heard that in a hardware store the other day, where I was making masculine purchases. It's a garden hose. And this is a great song. There's no getting around this. In many ways, here's one of the great things about this song. It is one of the purest. It is one of the purest representations of the sort of power ballad genre. Those rhinestone chord changes there, that dun, 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 A, E, B, or whatever it is, where it's just like as few chords as possible. And however unthreatening and sort of bland Bryan Adams may be, you know, in many ways, this is a legitimately sweet song, too. I have no problem with this. God damn, though, I was at the... I know that Safeway has this deal with K103 radio where they pipe K103 in, so if you're shopping, because in the era of the people meter and whatnot, it's all about getting as many people to listen, like, however you can. Even if you have to hold them down and just, like, orally rape them with your radio station. So when you go into a Safeway here in Portland, they are, by contractual obligation, supposed to be playing K103. Like, it is a business agreement. They cannot be playing something that's not K103. So... K103 may be interested to note that the Safeway I was at the other day was playing Guns N' Roses, so, you know, FYI. But I went to the Safeway near my house about 6 months ago, and it was at 2 in the morning, and they were, you know, shelf stocking time. And you figured that the radio gets changed a little bit late at night because it's, you know, the graveyard shift or whatever. And they were playing this, like, female rave version of this song. It sounded just like that the Euro rave music I was playing earlier, but it was this, and then it was like a woman with a really high-pitched voice. It was like some insane Asian thing.
Someone just mentioned a version of the song by someone named DJ Sammy.
That's who it was.
So is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't need to exist.
Remember the god-awful song that Bryan Adams and Rod Stewart and Sting did for Robin Hood?
All for One, All for Love.
Yeah.
I think I have that song right here.
I remember seeing them... doing a live performance of that, something on TV, and I was struck by the fact that Bryan Adams was the only one who had bothered to change his hairstyle in like 30 years. My God, that was terrible.
Oh, it's an awful song. No, it's reprehensible. There's nothing about that song that isn't bad. Let me just.
But it fitting really when you think about the movie it was attached to.
Let me just turn this off a little bit. Let me give you a little bit of. Let me give you a little bit of what you're asking for.
I love
here.
That you just have that there.
All right, let me just skip right to the... all right.
Something horrible? Rick has it. Oh, God.
I used to have to play this song when I was a DJ, like every 90 minutes for weeks. And the really great edgy marketing campaign they had for this song, because it's the three, you know, it's Adams, Stewart, and Sting... So we got all these teaser postcards from the record company before the song was released. We're going to be sending you a CD full of ass. Adams.
And they weren't lying.
But it's like, what? Even, let's pretend for a minute this isn't a bad song. Why would you ever promote a song like this, a love song from the Three Musketeers, by saying we're going to send you a CD full of ass is coming to your radio station? We're like, what the hell? And then as soon as we got it, we're like, it's this? See, I hit the post right there.
God, that's horrible.
Here's the great thing about this song.
This song, this should be the official song of Bristol Palin and Levi Johnson's love story.
The most admirable thing about this is that Mutt Lang wrote this song, and that it is just a thinly veiled rewrite of Everything I Do It For You by Bryan Adams, like 6 months earlier, which itself was a thinly veiled rewrite of Love Bites by Def Leppard. All of them written by Mutt Lang. I mean, that is one guy that has stirred a drink with the same swizzle stick for like 25 years. You know, and that's one of the few Def Leppard songs that he didn't then repurpose and make into a song for Shania Twain when he was married to her. I'll be there when you need. All right. You know, because I care, we're not even going to use the standard closing music for the show today. We're just going to let this song take us out. Right here on the Emerson News Network. I'm Rick Emerson. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor. I mangled that one. Advanced technology, magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Egler, and our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Rob and Stacy from Secret Aardvark. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It's Thursday, July 15th, 2010, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.